getting a divorce, even thinking about getting a divorce, can be overwhelming, scary, and sometimes exciting. Join divorce coach and mediator Mandy Walker for conversations about divorce. The more you know, the easier it will be to make your divorce healthier, less stressful, and to put it behind you. Here's Mandy.
Welcome to Conversations About Divorce. I'm Mandy Walker, and today we're talking about how to communicate with your ex to reach agreements and resolve conflict. One of the things I've learned is that disagreements are normal. We should expect them in every relationship. And so you should expect that you and your ex are not going to agree on everything. And if you're not comfortable handling disagreements, that's going to make you groan and tense up. So you have some choices. You can choose to go along with whatever your ex wants. That doesn't seem like it's a very viable option. You could decide that you're just going to say no to everything your ex wants. And that's not what I would recommend either, because that's going to mean ongoing conflict. And that's what harms children the most following divorce. And your third choice would be to take it step by step, issue by issue, and learn how to handle these difficult conversations better. And realistically, that third choice is the only meaningful option for most of us. Now, the good news is that there are some pretty simple techniques you can follow that will help you communicate more effectively. And here to help us with those techniques and to share them with us are two communication experts, Leslie Breach and Christina Jensen. Leslie and Christina are both with a company called Civil Communicator. It's a third-party communication platform designed to help parents in high-conflict situations communicate productively about the needs of their children. So welcome, Leslie and Christina.
Hello, thank you.
Thank you.
I'm so glad that you're able to join us today. Now, as I was preparing for the show, I was thinking about the tips that I've heard, and I think I would group them into the how, the when, and the what. So I thought we'd start off talking about how. And I think most people, I imagine, are used to communicating with their ex by text, phone, voicemail, and maybe less so by email. And I think that this is, it's a common complaint after divorce that people feel bombarded with messages and communications coming in different ways. And they end up feeling nagged or harassed. And ultimately, some of them block phone numbers from their phones. So would you recommend that people agree up front one way to communicate?
I'll go ahead and take this one. This is Christina. I definitely think it is helpful, especially in a high conflict divorce situation where you're trying to communicate with each other. It is helpful if you can just email each other, but in today's society of where we're all accessible all the time, people do tend to text and call. So if it gets to be too much, you can say, hey, let's just agree to email each other, because, you know, you could be going about your day and your ex all of a sudden is bombarding you with a million text messages and they're not getting a response. So they're like, hey, please respond. So if it gets to be too much, then it can be better just say, hey, let's just try and email each other. Let's just really try and just text only in emergency situations, or just kind of communicate with each other so that it is not bombarding both parties with messages all the time.
Right, right. And so you end up just having one place to check for messages, and it seems less intrusive.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. Yes, the texting can be good, but it can pop up all the time, and sometimes that can be a little intrusive. So unless it's an emergency situation, emails can be helpful. Or if there's, like, you know, sometimes, hey, if it's a quick message, I really need to get a hold of you, is it okay to text? Then you just talk about that so you're not getting hit up all the time.
Right. So there's two phrases that you used in responding, Christina, there. One was high conflict. So how would you describe what does a high conflict relationship look like?
Well, it's a lot of different relationships. Unfortunately, if they're in the situation, they're an ex for a reason. So there's some conflict that people could not get past. So those, I guess, tendencies can carry over into the partnership, or something in a partnership, to the relationship after the divorce. So it can be where one person is very aggressive and the other is not aggressive, and so one is sort of being bullied, or they just can't stand each other anymore, so they want to say no with whatever request the other person wants. It can be all sorts of different situations, or where they simply just cannot communicate well because they don't give enough details, so they just don't get anywhere. Right. So it can really be a lot of various situations, but definitely high conflict or usually aggression or just, passive aggressive, the tone. It can be a lot of situations where it's just where things tend to be less productive and there's a lot of aggression. That's definitely tends to be more high conflict.
Right. So we're talking about where people have difficulty communicating. It doesn't necessarily mean that there's protection orders or domestic violence involved or that. It's really, our focus for discussion then is more about anybody who's having challenges communicating with their ex.
Yeah, absolutely. So still, Christina. Yeah, it's just if you can't agree with your ex, which unfortunately in today's society, it happens a lot. And it doesn't have to be any protection order at all. Just cause it can be because they just don't agree. And, usually if you're communicating with an ex post-divorce, it is because of the children, because you have to communicate because you have kids. And the best interest, it's always the best interest of the kids, usually both parties, that's their focus, but sometimes the kids get lost in the conflict, unfortunately.
Right. So what about if you could set up a specific ringtone for the other party on your phone, and then you have the option of always letting it go to voicemail, because I think sometimes, and this is another strategy we'll talk about, but you don't have to respond or immediately. If it's not, it's about drawing boundaries, so you don't have to pick up the phone every time that person calls you.
This is Leslie, and I would definitely agree with that. I think boundaries are very important. I think now that the couple has split, that they have their own lives now, and they shouldn't need to feel they need to cater to the other person anymore. They shouldn't have to pick up that phone every single time and interfere with their day or their activity. And that's why I personally feel that the email communication is, or a single platform is best, because then it's on your own terms. You can answer that email, in the evening when you sit down after the children are in bed, or on your own terms when you want to answer that. And then I agree with what Christina said is text messages for emergencies are, that's really important, but, maybe not so much the phone calls. I see the phone calls go a little south when, after a divorce.
Right. So, you made a good point about emergencies, and I'm thinking that might be nice if you agreed to use a single platform for regular communications and to reserve the text for genuine emergencies, such as like taking your child to the emergency room or being in a car accident or not being able to pick up your child because of a significant mm-hmm. delay and you need the other parent to go. And it's really, it's an emergency then is anything that is time sensitive information. You'd know then if you were saying we'll use text to communicate, then the text message comes, that there's something out of the ordinary happening.
Absolutely.
So that's really sort of how to communicate, and we touched a little bit about when, in terms of you don't always have to respond in, or pick up the phone immediately, but do you have other tips about the timing and drawing boundaries around when to communicate?
This is Leslie, and what I have found from the people that we work with is not to communicate after 10 o'clock at night. I mean, it should definitely be at a reasonable time. In the evening seems like a good time. And then not so often. Don't communicate, send 5 to 10 emails at a time. Try to think about the importance of what you really want to say, what you really want to communicate, and, just try to sum that up in as few words as possible and not so much communication.
So what's magical about 10 o'clock at night? What happens after 10 o'clock at night?
You know, that's a really good question. We see any time after 10 o'clock at night that the communication just starts to ramble. I think people at that point, their day is done and they're ready for bed, and they they might want to fire off some emails, and they're just not thinking as clearly as they might, you know, maybe if they send one in the afternoon or maybe, you know, just a little bit earlier. I think it's that last minute, I am going to fire this off and go to bed.
Okay. So that's a good one. And so maybe this is related, but I also had on my list, like, definitely don't send any don't email after you've been drinking.
Oh, that's a definite one. We tell the people that we work with to, you know, if you haven't something you really want to send to the other person and you're struggling with it, go ahead and write it, and then keep it in draft, and then look at it the next day. And in most cases, the people that do that, that just kind of take a step back, and look at it the next day, they realize that the majority of that probably shouldn't go.
Okay. So that's kind of, maybe that ties into, I was thinking also that you might just want to adopt a personal standard of like waiting 24 hours, unless it's, you know, something that's really time sensitive, but especially if something
right.
that you've read has upset you a little bit or wrinkled you a little bit, you might say, I'm going to wait 24 hours before I write anything on that.
Absolutely. We have definitely noticed that. And that's the problem that I feel is with text messages, is it's right there, right at your fingertips. So easy to send something hurtful or scolding and be able to push that send button and you can't get back. And it's just such a quick communication that it doesn't give you time to even think before you hit the send.
Right. So, so we've got like waiting 24 hours, not sending after 10 o'clock, not responding when you're angry or upset about something. And that could be even on something that is unrelated to your child and your ex. It could be something that happened at work, but you're just not in a good mood. So you should just step away from the keyboard.
That's actually a phrase we use a lot, is to step away from the communication. Yes, we say that a lot.
Okay, well then...
This is Chris. Yeah, like Leslie said, it's in every situation, especially like, you know, you can receive an email or a text or something, and then your response, you just want to immediately reply to it. It's a knee-jerk reaction, and we do find that definitely if you just take a little bit of time... that kind of, if there's an escalated situation or communication, then that can be escalated, and just take a breather. And usually if you just take a few minutes, even 24 hours, to just think about it, the communication tends to be a lot better than that knee-jerk back and forth of, you know, where those tempers can flare. So we definitely see that time can help.
Right. So let me ask you this. When people start using your platform, how long does it take for them to adapt to some of these different techniques and strategies?
This is Leslie, and we usually notice a change within the first month when we start to you know, kind of lay out some of our suggestions, and usually within 30 days, we see a huge improvement in communication from both sides.
So that's encouraging. So it doesn't take very long to put these techniques to into practice and start seeing some benefits from that.
Absolutely.
Leslie and Christina, we're going to take a short break now. Listeners, thank you for joining us. Today, we're talking about how to communicate with your ex to reach agreements and resolve conflicts around parenting. My guests today are Leslie Briche and Christina Jensen. Leslie and Christina are both with a company called Civil Communicator, which is a third-party communication platform designed to help parents in high conflict situations communicate productively about the needs of their child. Leslie is one of the founders of Civil Communicator, and she's now their software developer. Leslie, there are so many really helpful features in your software, such as being able to use it from any device, an iPad, smartphone, desktop, the monitoring by a live trained person, official transcripts. I was wondering if you had a favorite feature that you'd like to share with our listeners.
My favorite feature is really the core of the product, which is the review process. And what that means is one of the parties sends in a communication, and it's reviewed by a human reviewer. And at that point, if the communication has some things in it that it shouldn't, or it has a little bit of aggression in it, we can revise it and just leave the good part, leave the content. And we do this for the other side coming in. So every communication that comes in, we review it. And that's my favorite part, because we are taking out any passive-aggressive statements, anything that would be hurtful to the other party, and we end up with a very civilized communication that is actually very nice. And neither party reacts with a bad communication when you've just got a nice message or just a plain neutral message. So that right. That is absolutely my favorite.
Right. Well, I think that sounds like it is really helpful, and I like the fact that it's reviewed by a live person, and it's not some sort of computer software that's doing the review. I think that would be really helpful. Christina, what's the feature that you think that most of your customers appreciate?
It ties a little bit back into what Leslie said, but I do think it is the personal touch. I mean, from the minute they get signed up, we try and, help them, walk them through, tutoring them on kind of how it works. And I think that they can come to us sometimes in a high conflict situation where they just haven't been able to agree, and they're just like, oh, my gosh, this is going to be impossible. And we tend to see that they soften a lot once they actually feel like, oh, my gosh, somebody can actually help me communicate with my ex. And so I definitely think it's the human touch that, from the get-go, that we definitely want to set their account up, get all the background information on them and their children. They're able to reach us by phone, by email. We call them back personally. When we get to know them, we're neutral, and we definitely protect both sides. If there was an aggressor and then somebody's kind of being bullied, we find that both people feel better about the situation because they just both feel like they have a neutral party that's helping them communicate better. We even do things so far as, like, if they're in a rush or they don't have great Wi-Fi or can't send a message, they can call us and say, hey, can you type this message for me really quickly and send it on? I'm in a bad spot. So we'll do a pro se message where we'll type what they say and we'll send it on. They can call us if they've got a draft of something difficult and say, hey, I'm really trying to communicate this to my ex, but I don't really know how to say it. Will you help me write it? And so we'll even help them write messages sometimes. So right. I guess the biggest thing that they appreciate is just that we are here to help them, the personal touch, and we're completely neutral, and we definitely want to help and protect both parties.
And that sounds like a great service that you're offering. Leslie or Christina, you have another offer to share with our listeners.
We do. This is Christina, and we definitely want to let everybody know about Civil Communicator. It is a website that is open to anybody. It's $18 a month for a single payer, or $36 for two people. And we want to give all listeners a 1 month free. So if they go to our website, www.civilcommunicator.com, and they put in the coupon code DIVORCE, all lowercase, everybody gets an automatic 30-day free trial. But with this coupon code DIVORCE, they will get an additional month free.
Wow. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. We want everybody to try it risk-free. And just once people try it, they tend to love it. And it's just they're kind of their only way to communicate with their ex now. And they really tend to like that feature. Mm-hmm. That this is just, they just feel so protected. going forward, that they don't have to be scared of answering that email or scared of opening that text message. What is it going to say?
That's really helpful. So I have another question for you, and I'm curious, based on your experience, how much of conflict between co-parents seems to stem from how they're communicating rather than the topic itself?
I think in most cases, it is how they communicate. It is the words that they use. We notice when we have been helping our subscribers, it's the way they say something, and they don't even mean it to be offensive or hurtful, but they put little things in there. It might even just be so subtle. And if we take that out or help them revise it or say it in a more positive light, it is so much better. It's usually not the topic. It's usually a good reason for the communication. They have a good topic. It's how they present it.
Mm. Interesting. So on that, kind of stepping off from that, I know that one of your guidelines is that communication should have no greetings and no closing. And when I heard that, my gut reaction was, well, that's kind of rude. I'm always telling my kids about how to, you know, they send me emails and ask me to proof them for them before they send it on for like applications or questions to professors and stuff. And so I'm always saying to them, hey, is not a correct opening to an email. and so it just seems like it's odd to me. It seems like it goes against all etiquette standards to get rid of the greeting and closing. But I was wondering, could you explain to our listeners why that one strategy is so helpful, and what difference does it make?
And that has been very, very helpful. And we find it helpful because a lot of people become focused on writing to writing their communication like a letter. And we encourage fact-based. Let's just get the facts out. Let's not feel that you have to say, you know, hi, Susie, how are you today? Hope you had a nice weekend. I mean, like we normally do on our emails. This is just, should be at this point in the game. It should be fact-based communication. If you're using a platform like Civil Communicator, even email, you know that you've written to the other person. It's only between the two parties. Nobody else is going to be getting this. And it doesn't need to start out every communication with, you know, the person, hi, Susie, hi, Jim. It doesn't have to. You don't have to. You just get down to it. I'd like to let you know that swimming lessons have changed till Wednesdays. I'd like to let you know, just get to the communication. The same, we call it pleasantries. We don't encourage pleasantries. As a party might say, I hope you had a wonderful weekend. I hope you had a wonderful birthday. And to most of us, that sounds very, very nice, and it sounds so cordial, and it sounds like these parties are really getting along. But after you have had the struggles that a lot of these couples have and the high conflict, if someone says, I hope you had a really nice weekend with our children, it just, you know, really, really sometimes can bother the person receiving that. Like, you do not care that I had a nice weekend with, you know, so it's better just to leave that out and just get down to the facts. And we have found that if we really encourage people to do that, the communication is so much better.
Okay. So fact-based. So one of the other strategies, and I think you mentioned it earlier, is really to be disciplined, like one topic per email message. And I know for when I'm working with some of my clients, I adopt that strategy, and it makes it easier for me for record keeping and keeping track of discussions. But I'm wondering, what's the benefit to co-parents by just keeping it as one topic per email?
And this is Leslie again. It kind of goes along the same lines. It's exactly what you just said. It keeps it so much easier to track that conversation. I mean, we've seen some of our clients that we help that have, you know, two or three different topics, you know, where they try to put in one message. It makes it very hard for the other parent or other person to digest it. So you really got to sit down. You got, okay, well, I'm going to answer this one first and then this one. And then some things get answered and not others. It is so much better to keep each email as one topic, keep it as a single discussion. Even if you needed to share that discussion with a professional, it's a lot easier to share one topic than to try to weed out, you know, the different lots of different. Well, don't look at this one. It's just this one that we're talking about. It's really nice to keep them separate.
I'm thinking it's probably easier too to respond to one email, one topic, rather than one email with five different topics in it. You're going to think, I need more time to respond to that, or it'd be easier to miss a topic or miss a question.
Yes.
When it's all buried like that. So,
absolutely.
What about references to past behaviors? Are these ever relevant? Is it ever productive to raise past behaviors, past patterns?
This is Christina. It's really not. I mean, we tend to see in these situations that, you know, they're in the situation because they truly can't agree. And so it's in the past, and, you know, someone might say, you know, Susie's got swimming lessons or a swim meet this weekend, and I know you won't come because you haven't ever come before. I mean, that isn't productive at all. So that's the sort of past resentments or any past, you know, any issues that have gone on, just need to let go in the past and just really communicate about what is needed to get the messages back and forth, because you just need to let that stuff go for it to be productive mm-hmm. going forward.
Right. Or vent about it in another forum, not to your other parent here.
Correct. Yeah, that's just not productive for anybody. And when we review messages on Civil Communicator, we take that out. It's just not productive. It's not getting a message across, and it just kind of keeps the fight going. And our goal is to de-escalate any issues, any past resentments. So we just definitely try and take those emotions, resentments out.
Well, I have another situation where I'm really curious how you handle this. And this is like situations where your child's come home and told you something. Like Jeff came home and said, you let him decide what time to go to bed. Or Jeff came home and told me that you were yelling and screaming at a driver on your way to karate on Saturday. Or that you'd been drinking beers while he had his friends over. I mean, those situations, some of those situations could be alarming and it's tricky, but how do you advise parents to handle that? Because you want your child to still talk to you and tell you what's going on, but you don't want to get them in trouble with that other parent for talking.
That is a tricky one, and that's something that we're faced with, you know, every day of helping parents with. And, you know, we kind of consider that a little bit of hearsay. You want to, like you said, you want to listen to your child and you want to take everything that they're saying, but you don't always want to throw it right back to the other parent. Because again, it can be hearsay, and the child could have some of the facts, you know, mixed up a little bit. Maybe you just are a good listener and give your child some advice or console them, and only bring it up to the other parent if it's something that you feel, you know, could be very hurtful to the child. But then you have to be very careful how you do that and not accuse the other parent of anything. Maybe bring it up in a very nice way. Say, you know, our child mentioned this. You know, what's your side of the story? Could you tell me a little bit about this? Is there anything to be, you know, concerned here? It's all in how you word it to the other parent.
Right, right. So what about a situation where the other party has a topic and they keep raising it every few weeks? They just won't take no for an answer. You feel like you're being beaten into submission. I mean, how do you suggest handling those?
For one, we suggest that the parent very, straightforward says, you've asked and I've answered this, and I do not want to address this anymore. And you try to be very firm and state your position and, okay, let's move on. And that's, what we suggest for parents to do, on their own if they're just communicating via an email. If they're using, a platform like Civil Communicator, we can stop a conversation like that. We take cues from one of the subscribers, and if they say, this has gone round and round, it's been asked and answered, and I don't want to swap parenting time. I do not want to do this. Then we will not let that conversation go on any longer.
Okay, but it's a little bit different having somebody raising the topic and saying, "I want to talk about changing parenting time," and the other parent just saying, "No, don't want to talk about it," as opposed to saying, "I'm not able to change parenting time at this time because my work schedule is XYZ. So,
right.
Maybe it's like you have to make sure that you do. I think that people have to engage in a dialogue, but there is a point that you don't have to keep engaging it and keep repeating the same information. But it doesn't seem like it's productive just to kind of like I visualize somebody crossing their arms in front of them and saying, "Nope, don't want to talk about it. I want it to stay exactly how it is," and that's the end of the conversation.
Yes, and that's definitely not productive communication. But there are some parents that almost harass the other parent by their communication, where they'll say, "We swap next Monday for Tuesday," and the parent will say, "No. Well, what about Thursday for Friday? No. What about?" And so that's a very big topic with parents is swapping time. And then finally, you'll hear one parent that say, "I just want to follow the court orders," and the other person just has to honor that. But the swapping of time is very confusing, and it can be very frustrating,
right.
To be asked, that same question all the time about swapping.
Right. So we are out of time now, or coming up to out of time. And Leslie, one more question for you. I was wondering if you could share, what is there one technique that brings about the biggest change in people's communications?
I think the biggest technique would be to use the fact-based communication. Just be very clear and concise on what you're asking for, and why you're asking for, and what you're asking for. If you can just make sure that your question or your statement is very clear and concise, it helps tremendously.
Hmm. Okay, so fact-based communication. And Christina, what's the technique that you think is hardest for people to adapt to?
I think it's their old tendencies, whatever their old tendencies were in their relationship, those are hard to stop. We are kind of are who we are. And so I guess the biggest technique is just, to sort of let all that stuff go and truly realize, they're communicating in the best interest of their children so that they can co-parent in a really productive way. And so I know it's difficult for many people when there's that resentment there, but just to try and let that go and just really cooperate and really make the communication productive, knowing that it's in the best interest of the children.
Thank you, Christina. And thank you both for joining us today.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you, Leslie and Christina, so much for joining us today. Divorce is a feature of our society, and I think our challenge is to create a model where cooperative parenting post-divorce is the norm, and that both parents can stay actively involved with their children. And the work that you're doing with Civil Communicator is helping to do that. So thank you.
Thank you.
And thank you very much for having us today.
So listeners, Thank you for joining us today. My guests for this conversation are Christina Jensen and Leslie Breesh with Civil Communicator, and you can check out their program at civilcommunicator.com. And Leslie, one more time, if you could give, Leslie or Christina, if you could share with our listeners that offer that you have for them one more time, that would be great.
Yes, so they just go to civilcommunicator.com, and in the coop, there's an area for a coupon code, and if they just type in divorce, all lowercase, we will give them 1 month free, and that will work for either the one payer or the two payer. Either at $18 or $36, they will get 1 month free.
That's awesome. Listeners, the biggest single gift that you can give your child after divorce is to reduce the ongoing conflict between you and their other parent. It's the ongoing conflict that harms children. So the first step you can take to do this is by using the techniques we've discussed today when you communicate with your ex. And you can start by doing this yourself. You don't even need your ex to be on board with them or in agreement. You can lead the way. You can set the standards for yourself. Then if your communications don't improve, I would say to you, don't wait for some huge big crisis to suggest that you should switch to using a third party platform. That's a bit like when people go to marriage counseling. Everybody waits until the last straw, and by then it's the problems are bigger and they take longer to resolve. So do the opposite. Sign up to a platform early and start learning how to communicate more effectively with the goal of being able to graduate to being able to communicate directly and on your own once you've learned and practiced the techniques. This really could be a win-win for everyone. Thank you for listening. Remember to check out my blog at sincemydivorce.com. You'll find a synopsis of the show on there, together with that coupon code, divorce, all lowercase letters. And I hope you'll join us next time. I'm Mandy Walker. This is Conversations About Divorce.